This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com.
To John Breach, CBSSports.com, Pick Six Podcast, super friend, at John Breach on Twitter. Dude, if you haven't seen the video yet, it's the greatest thing ever. It is such a bad look. It would be a perfect exclamation point to Tepper throwing the drink on the fan of the opposing team. I guess it was in Jacksonville or wherever it happened, Atlanta. I don't know where it happened anymore, Tampa, this year.
Jacksonville.
It was in Jacksonville. If you haven't seen it yet, you can hit to my timeline at A Gold Fan. It's right there. It is beautiful. How you doing?
Hey, look, you know, no one could accuse David Tepper of not caring. If he gets so mad he's out there throwing a drink at people, gets so offended by a sign at a restaurant, man, that is a guy who cares, maybe cares too much, maybe hates everyone. But also, it helps when you're a billionaire and you can just kind of react to anything however you want.
It absolutely does. All right, quick thoughts. A couple of things have been pointed out to me that I was not aware of. I was otherwise occupied with hockey last night. So the Panthers didn't give up a ton, obviously, to move up one spot. They had a pick swap of a sixth and a fifth. 141 goes out, 200 comes in. A little bit of a difference there, but it might not matter at all. What did you think of the Panthers moving into the last pick in the first round, moving up one spot to get Xavier Legette?
Yeah, I don't have an issue with it. I think a lot of people were kind of scratching their heads about why Carolina would make that move from 33 to 32. And I think the obvious answer is because it gives you that fifth year option. So, you know, it's as simple as that. Is now you have him under your control for 5 years. If you take him with the first pick in the second round, now you have to, and he ends up being a star, you have to worry about getting that extension done after year three. Now you can wait till year four. So it's definitely about getting control of the player and having that contract last a little bit longer. But look, the Carolina Panthers needed some receiving help. I think that most people would agree that was probably their biggest need going into the draft. So I don't think if you're a Panthers fan that you can be disappointed at all. You saw a team that was aggressive. They got in the first round and they filled their biggest need. And I think that's exactly what you want to see if you are a Panthers fan.
And if he's really good, they can sign him to that contract after year three anyway, right?
Yeah, exactly. But this just gives you, and I think it's more if they're on the fence. If they look like they could be great, they're kind of on the cusp of that, or in the good range, then it's, all right, well, now we have that fifth-year option. We have another year to get things figured out. But if they end up looking like Jamar Chase or Justin Jefferson or A.J. Brown, then you just sign them up after 3 years anyway, so it doesn't matter. But, yeah, that the extra year is definitely a big thing.
All right, now if you were drafting at 39 and you really needed a cornerback or maybe even another wide receiver, what's the best value left on the board in your estimation?
Well, it is interesting when you look at how the board kind of fell. I think if you need a cornerback, you're in a great spot right now because you look at all the guys that fell. I mean, whether we're talking about Cooper DeJean, Kool-Aid McKinstry, you have Ennis Rakestraw from Missouri there. You just have a lot of top-tier guys that if you're the Panthers, maybe you trade up to 34 or 35 to make sure you get one of those guys. But I think any team that needs a cornerback at the top of the second round is in a great spot. And even receiver, I think we saw quite a few receivers kind of fall down there into the second round. I think A.D. Mitchell from Texas is probably the biggest guy, but then you also have Ladd McConkey and Keon Coleman, who are two guys that were arguably could have been taken in the first round. So I do think the Panthers are going to have a lot of options at 39th overall, and they should be able to get a good player.
Yeah, if you think about it, there are at least four really good cornerbacks sitting out there, right? And there's at least two wide receivers. If you're the Panthers and you went wide receiver with your first two picks, I don't think it would be the worst thing that ever happened because they have such a lack of like game-breaking ability at that position. Adam Thielen's really a glorified tight end the way he is used, and that's fine. You bring in Deontay Johnson. Now you've got the kid from South Carolina. If you added one more, like, top wide receiver prospect to the mix, it wouldn't be the worst thing that ever happened.
Yeah, I think you could certainly justify it, because if you're the Panthers front office, the only thing you need to know going into 2024 is whether Bryce Young is your quarterback of the future. And it's not really fair to assess how he's playing if you don't have any weapons around him. So what you need to do is put as many weapons around him as possible. And if you draft another receiver, and like you just said, you added Deontay Johnson, you used your top two picks on receivers. Now you go into 2024 and you say, all right, well, now this isn't Bryce Young's hand. This is on him to show that he can be our franchise quarterback. And then if he struggles with all those weapons, that's a whole nother issue going into 2025. But at least you know. So, yeah, I don't think it would be completely crazy to take a receiver, especially if one of the guys you like, falls in your lap.
All right, so which team reached the most for a quarterback in the first round?
Adam Gold here with my man, Coach Pete DeRuiter, Capital Financial Advisory Group. Are most of your clients hands-on, or they just give you their money and let it work for them?
About 90% give the money, and then we meet every year and go through status reports, sure. Have a financial pit stop, making sure everything's fine. It is like a puzzle, Adam, but for the next 10 of you, we'll solve your own retirement puzzle at no cost or obligation.
Call and claim your comprehensive review with Coach Pete and the team, 888-843-0013, or text Adam to 600-700.
Adam Gold is a paid spokesman. Investment advisory services offered by Capital Financial Advisory Group, a North Carolina registered investment advisor.
You know, I will say that, look, Michael Penix was definitely the most shocking pick, but I would say probably the Broncos taking Bo Nix at 12th overall. I mean, look, Bo Nix has been in college forever. When you're a quarterback that's good, you go to the NFL. You don't stay in college forever. It's because your talent is just so much better. It transcends everything. And so you say, all right, I am leaving school early and I'm going to the NFL draft. And that is not what Bo Nix did. He is just the Van Wilder of college quarterbacks. Just stay there as long as he possibly could. And so I'm not sure how he's going to do in the NFL. So I think of the six quarterbacks taken, he was the biggest reach. But I do think he also landed in a good situation with Sean Payton. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out.
Yeah, Sean Payton's pretty much attaching his Denver Broncos legacy to this, isn't he?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There's no way this pick is made unless Sean Payton signed off on it. And if he's looking there saying, you know, I don't know if the Broncos panicked and thought, man, all five quarterbacks off the board. If we don't take Bo Nix now, we're in trouble. And maybe that's what happened. But look, you are really saying we got rid of Russell Wilson. We're kind of starting over from scratch here at quarterback. So Bo Nix better be good. So, you know, clearly Sean Payton feels good about this because he's hitching his wagon to Nix.
Let me ask you real quick. I want to go back to the Falcons thing because, look, I'm not an evaluator, so it's such an uneducated opinion. But I love everything about Michael Penix. I think the Falcons made the smartest possible move if you remove the fact that they did it with the eighth pick in the draft and Dallas Turner on the board, which is obviously something that they needed. But they got their quarterback in the future, and not only doesn't he have to play, he won't play for two full years, which means that by the time he hits the ground, he will have had time to, you know, he'll have a couple of preseasons where he will probably play a lot under his belt, and he will have had time to learn the NFL game. I think this gives them a great chance of having a quarterback 2 years from now, or three, whatever it is, 3 years from now, that is ready to play and ready to be good. I don't know that any of the other teams who drafted quarterbacks will have a better quarterback in year three than Michael Penix as a result.
I mean, look, Penix is going to be 24 when the season starts. You put him on the bench for 2 years. Now he's 26 and still hasn't played an NFL snap. Plus, the biggest advantage of having a rookie quarterback is that you have them on your rookie contract, and now you've lost 2 years of that without seeing him play a single snap in a game. So you don't even know if he's good. So after year three, you're going to have to make a decision on his fifth-year option after only seeing 1 year. Imagine if the Panthers had to make a decision on Bryce Young's fifth-year option right now after seeing him play one season. I mean, that's almost an impossible thing to do unless they have a Patrick Mahomes-esque season. And so it just feels like if you're the Falcons, there is no reason. So, again, the rookie contract is your biggest advantage, but you threw it out the window because you have to pay Kirk Cousins $90 million.
Yeah.
over the next 2 years. And if Kirk Cousins plays well, what if he leads you to two division titles? You really want to get rid of him when you have two more years of him on our contract and throw Penix out there who's inexperienced? You have no idea what he's going to look like. So it just, I mean, there's a lot of question marks, and I do agree with you. I like Michael Penix. I think he could be a great quarterback. I just think this was the most bizarre situation for him to land in.
Yeah, honestly, I wouldn't have done it at 8, right? If I were the Falcons, I would have traded back to, like, I don't know, 13, 14 and done it. I wouldn't have done it at 8. It's silly to do it at 8 because you really overdrafted Michael Penix, and you overdrafted a player who isn't going to play for 2 years. The whole, the salary that you pay your quarterback for the first couple of years, the problem I have with that, and this is really more philosophical than anything, and it's probably unfair to make a blanket statement. Caleb Williams may come in and be great. I don't think any of the other quarterbacks are going to come in and be even good. Jaden Daniels, Drake May, J.J. McCarthy, Bo Nix. I don't think any of them are going to be good in year one. Maybe they'll be good by year two or three, but I don't think any of them, because they're in bad situations. I think all of them. Drake May might be in the same situation as Bryce Young was in with the Panthers, and who has no weapons. I know they've got Juju Smith-Schuster, but that's basically all they've got in New England, and the offensive line is suspect. So with a new head coach, I don't know what's going to happen there. But I think you can run the risk of ruining quarterbacks by asking them to play too soon. I think the Panthers hope that they haven't done that with Bryce Young, because you can develop a lot of bad habits that are hard to break. I just think letting a quarterback wait is never a terrible thing.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that the philosophy of the NFL has just changed on that, where that was the standard going back in the day. So, you know, when Carson Palmer was drafted in 2003, the Bengals sat him for the first year behind John Kitna, and nobody thought that was a big deal at all.
Nope.
Because that is how things worked. And then it just slowly progressed to, wow, if we're going to use this top pick on a quarterback, he's got to start right away. And I really think that the class that kind of pushed that through was 2008, when Matt Ryan and Joe Flacco both went in the first round and both found immediate success. We saw Matt Ryan lead the Falcons to the playoffs after the whole Michael Vick thing and really turn that franchise around. So, yeah, and it's not easy for a rookie quarterback to come in and just succeed in the NFL, because, I mean, look at the 2021 draft. Zach Wilson and Trey Lance, two of the top three picks, they're probably never going to start another game unless they're a backup somewhere and the starting quarterback gets injured. So it is absolutely a crapshoot. And then that's the other thing is, who knows, like you're saying, if any of these quarterbacks are going to be good in their first 2 years. I do think, you know, I agree with you for the most part that they didn't land in great situations. I think J.J. McCarthy's in a great situation.
He might be, yeah.
Addison, Justin Jefferson, Aaron Jones, but I also think he's probably the fifth best quarterback out of these six. You know, if you put Caleb Williams or Jaden Daniels in Minnesota, I think they have a great team, but I feel like the jury's still out on J.J. McCarthy. But, yeah, I do agree that probably Caleb Williams and J.J. McCarthy landed in good situations, but the other four, it's really up in the air.
Eli Manning didn't wait a lot, but he waited behind Kurt Warner. Phillip Rivers waited 2 years behind Drew Brees. Aaron Rodgers waited behind Brett Favre. Jordan Love waited behind him. Patrick Mahomes waited a year behind Alex Smith. I think there's something to it. But again, it's philosophical, because logically and from a salary cap standpoint, you're 100% right that the advantage of having a good quarterback, a quarterback you can win with on a rookie deal, on a basically nothing as it pertains to quarterbacks for 3 or 4 years, that's an undefeated advantage. You'll always be able to have a better team. So I totally understand your point. What'd you think of what the Vikings did with essentially sacrificing quantity for quality by trading up to get McCarthy? I've been calling him J.J. McHenry all day. I don't even know why. McCarthy and getting Dallas Turner at 17, trading up to do that.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm so mixed on the Vikings. We had our podcast after the show last night. One of our co-hosts called them a winner of the draft. And, you know, they did okay. But you look at all the draft picks they sacrificed to get,
right.
You know, they had to make a trade with the Texans to get to 23. Then they trade from 23 up to 17. They had to give up a pick to get from 11 to 10. Just they had to make all of these moves. And when when we're talking about the rookie contract, they're a great example of how teams think right now. You have the Vikings who had Kirk Cousins, who I think most people would agree is a better quarterback than J.J. McCarthy right now, because J.J. McCarthy hasn't played in the NFL. And the Vikings had Danielle Hunter, and they let him walk because he's too expensive. So now you replace Cousins with McCarthy and Danielle Hunter with Dallas Turner. So basically you're banking on the fact that those guys can give you maybe 80% of the production at 20% of the price. So that's just team building philosophy right now. And if J.J. McCarthy is a slightly above average NFL quarterback, he doesn't even have to be great, I think the move makes sense for the Vikings. I would give their draft like a B. I do like what they did. They replaced they got their pass rusher. They got their quarterback. But, man, you know, getting rid of Dino Hunter, who is a star, and getting rid of Kirk Cousins, certainly you don't know if that's going to work.
John Breach, CBSSports.com, Pick 6 Podcast, Super Friend. They were live after the draft last night. All right, final question, and then we will let you go. And it's just I'll broad brush it. I know the Bears went Caleb Williams, Rome Odunze at number 9. I think it's a good division now. I think what the Bears have done, at least offensively, what the Packers are, what the Lions can be, and what Minnesota is, that the best division in football now?
I mean, you could say it's up there. It's definitely up there. I mean, and when you consider that last year, going into last year, it was, well, are the Lions actually going to be good? Jordan Love, no one knows if he's any good. The Vikings seem like a paper tiger. They probably won't repeat as champions. And then you had the Bears. So everybody was kind of just down on the NFC North, which is just the total opposite of where everyone is going to be coming into the 2024 season. And I think the crazy thing is that you have Caleb Williams, the number one overall pick, is going to a team that went 7-10 last year. You don't have that happen where the number one, you know, the draft is designed for crappy teams to get the best players. And instead you have an average team getting the best player. And so you look at that Bears roster and it's pretty stacked with Keenan Allen and DJ Moore and Cole Kmet and now Rome Odunze. So, you know, Caleb Williams is going to have a lot of weapons. And so when you're talking about they were the worst team in the NFC North, and if that is the worst roster in the NFC North, then my gosh, the NFC North is absolutely stacked.
John Breach, at John Breach on Twitter, CBS Sports, Pick 6 Podcast, Super Friend. I thank you very much, man. I appreciate your time. Enjoy day 2.
Yep, thanks for having me, Gold.
Hey, thank you, man.
I chose William Peace because of the personalized education it offers, which allows students to truly know their professors. It's really possible to make genuine connections with your professors and learn intentionally here and dive deep into what you're passionate about.
A 12-to-1 student-to-faculty ratio is just one of the many reasons students choose William Peace University. Extra attention starts day 1 for career planning with their Career Services Center. Find out all they have to offer at peace.edu.